Hello, hello, my AOWs. Welcome back to the show. Today, we're talking all about the bombshell that dropped on March 5th, 2024. That bombshell is The Lancet, a four-part series that they published all about menopause. And in it, their main argument is that menopause has been, quote, over-medicalized. I don't even know if that's like a real word. We're going to get into exactly what my thoughts are, some of the facts, and importantly, some of the context behind this article. Let's go.
Hi, and welcome to Health by Heather Hirsch, a podcast dedicated to uncovering many of the women's health issues many of us are wondering about, but few of us are talking about. My mission is to expose the current gaps in knowledge and care on all things women's health. Enjoy.
Oh my goodness. There's rarely menopause tea, but I guess there is menopause tea this week. So in this episode, I'm going to sit down with you and give you my thoughts about this Lancet article. Now, I had been pinged about this article a week or so ago. Time is a flat circle, and I kind of forget when it was first announced and it was embargoed, so you couldn't read the thing in its entirety. And it made so many people's jaws just drop to the floor. And all the menopause doctors that you know and love and all of their podcasts, a lot of us are amazing friends and colleagues, and immediately circulated it amongst ourselves. And I have to tell you, when I was at a bachelorette party, when I was reading through this, and I laughed out loud at multiple points in this article. But initially, I thought this article was so disturbing that I thought maybe we should just not even talk about it. Maybe it just doesn't deserve anyone's attention. It will get blown over and it will go away. And honestly, actually, I think that is probably going to happen. Truth be told, I think that even, truth be told, people are like, oh gosh, is this going to be like the WHI scare? Nope. We are way past that. It's been like about 24 hours since it was released at 2 p.m. EST on March 5th. And already there is tons and tons and tons of social media doctors, allied healthcare professionals, experts, journalists, women, all signing change.org petitions. So I do not think this is going to have like a long lasting impact. But I think what it is social and historical context. And I think that's actually what's really the most important point about this. I mean, many of my friends and colleagues have been going through line by line and rebutting it, which I think is wonderful. Somebody should do that. But taking this sort of bird's eye view of this, because history tends to repeat itself, and that's what they are trying to do here, I think the social and political and historical context is actually interesting. And I want to give you a little bit of context about this article. And as I am podcasting, I'm going to be flipping back and forth through a whole bunch of different screens here. So I'm going to do my best to make sure this is not as dicey and choppy as it could be. But I want to really take you back in time a couple of years ago. So let's go to like 2018, 2019. At the time, I had moved from Ohio State to the Brigham and Women's Hospital, and time doesn't revolve around me, but I'm only saying that to set the stage of where we are socially, culturally, politically in this quote unquote menopause movement. And there's certain times that we can use as big shifts in the timeline. The biggest one probably being the New York Times article that came out February was 2023 and the pandemic, of course, which is 2020 into 2021. The pandemic was so important in the menopause movement. And I would love to say, oh gosh, it was me or it was this clinician or is this YouTube channel. No. It was the pandemic where a lot of women were on their phones and it was lay women asking questions about perimenopause, posting about their symptoms, some people piping in about HRT, some doctors, cooperating on the benefits of HRT, the safety of HRT, me included. But this didn't come from the top down, from medical communities down. This came from grassroots up. This came from women being at home on their screens, talking to each other and watching, you know, again, a couple of doctors talking about this. And from there, then we had things like the New York Times article. We had Oprah doing The Life You Live with, I was honored to be on with Sharon Malone and Maria Shriver and Drew Barrymore. So that was 2023. Okay, so pandemic 2020, 2021, we're gaining a lot of traction. Let's go back to 2017, 2018, okay? I am a couple years out of fellowship. I'm really, really into menopause. I'm recruited to go to Boston and build this menopause clinic there. And at the time, I started my little Instagram, which, you know, it was around 2016, 2017. And I was like, this is immediately going to take off. No one's posting about menopause. And after doing a little bit of a hashtag search, I found the one and only Dr. Louise Newsom in the UK. And honestly, this was how I found her, was through Instagram, was through social media, which keep that in mind. And I was like, who is she? What is she talking about? And I loved that she had a view of midlife and menopause that was seemingly very similar to mine and honestly still is, which really at the core is just that women lose their hormones. And the majority of women are good candidates for hormone therapy replacement. And we should be talking about the safety of this. That's the core. Now, you know, there's always more context. There's always more to the story. I don't want to speak for Louise. I don't want to speak for anyone else. I'm just speaking for me. And it was interesting to watch her because at the time she was the fastest growing social media doctor. And a lot of people look to that as actually, if you go back historically, even before the quote menopause movement in the US, there was a menopause movement in the UK that truthfully really started with Louise. Now, I have said this before on this podcast many a times. And if you actually want to hear me foreshadowing this, because I did, go back and listen to the episode I did about should we call menopause a hormone deficiency syndrome? I probably recorded that, oh gosh, time's a flat circle, a few months ago. And it's about this same thing, which is why I think the social culture and historical context of this is actually more important than sitting and arguing over the nitty gritty details, which happy to do. And I know that people will do in the coming weeks. But I could see that there was basically a political spectrum being formed. Let's say you've got your left, which is, I don't want to say that nothing I'm going to say is absolute. Everything that I say is opinion. And I truthfully mean that because, again, I'm going to use examples that I don't want to pigeonhole people. But let's say on the left, you've got a clinician like, let's say me, I don't know, Louise Newsom, my mentor, Dr. Holly Thacker, you know, talking about that most women, let's just say the left is, most women are good candidates for hormone therapy. And most women have not been counseled on hormone therapy. And therefore, they're actually not given autonomy. They may think that they have autonomy, or doctors think they have autonomy because they're not asking or they don't want it. But that's only because they've never been given the full story. Let's talk about the treatment for when a hormone's gone and we have evolved past our ovaries. What can a woman do? And on that note, it's not just about hot flashes. It's not just about the quote unquote few years where you have symptoms. No, it's about what does menopause mean for someone who now doesn't live 5 years postmenopausal, but maybe 20, 30, 40, 50 years postmenopausal. Because I have many patients in their 20s, 30s, and 40s, and 50s. Okay. And you could live to be 100. Go for it. If you're on hormone therapy. Anyways, and so maybe let's say the left. I don't know. And then you've got the right. And the right started, I think, shortly after Louise became very popular. And the right is saying, no, no, no. This is natural. Sure, you can treat it. Yeah, if symptoms are really bad, use low doses. Don't use them for too long. It could increase the risk of this. It could increase the risk of that. Lots of you know, obviously, you know what side I'm on. So I can't be unbiased in recording this episode. But again, also, I've got a decade of experience, treated thousands of patients, and I've been doing this research and talking about literally menopause nonstop. I don't shut up for the last decade or so. So let's say that's the messaging over on the right. Okay. And this is a political spectrum. This is literally nothing more than this. This is a spectrum of people with opinions on how the public should feel. Right. Doctors, scientists, researchers, lay women. Now we got politicians, business owners, VCs. We got a lot of people involved. But let's say that's kind of the landscape. You've got the left saying more women should know about hormone replacement therapy. So much data has shown that it's safe and effective. Many women are good candidates. And in order for them to make their own decision to take it or not, they should know everything there is to know about the long-term risks of estrogen deprivation. Fair. Okay. And then, of course, this movement starting to rise in about 2017 to 2018 to 2019. I believe, if you ask me, my opinion, Louise Newsom. Then over in the United States, you get the pandemic. Boom. And then all of a sudden, you know, you get some social media clinicians, some doctors on TikTok, on Instagram, etc. You've got me, my big mouth. I'm on YouTube. I'm podcasting. I'm everywhere. I've had this podcast since 2018. I think this is episode 201, and y'all know I number them wrong, so it's probably like number 220. But then the pandemic hits in the United States, and then you get, like, you know, this skyrocketing of momentum in 2022, and 2023 is like, bam, right? Really hit home in the United States. And you've got, you know, just there is the landscape. Okay. Now, we got to think maybe a little bit about motives, okay, if we're going to get into the sociology of this. And, you know, to me, the motives on the right is sort of like, well, as they're watching the left grow, and I hate to use left and right. I'm sorry. It's just all I got, guys. As they're watching the left grow, in this example, they're thinking, well, you know, we're not getting our fair share of attention anymore. And potentially there is some... what is the word I want to use? I don't know. You know, the biggest commodity right now, you know what the biggest commodity is right now? Attention. Attention is the biggest commodity. Attention is the biggest commodity. Maybe there's not enough attention. Maybe we're not getting enough attention. There is feelings involved. There is egos involved. There's probably money involved. Okay. And so in 2022, this is, again, I talked about this in this older podcast. In 2022, The Lancet, which is, there's offices in like New York, London, I think Australia, but it tends to be very UK centric. I could be wrong about that. I don't know everything. I like to think that I do, but I don't. They publish their first piece talking about the over medicalization of menopause. So they're foreshadowing without knowing it or knowing it, I don't know, what they were going to be publishing in 2024. And then out comes this new article in 2024, which really warns about the harms of quote unquote over medicalization of menopause. And it really is a quite fascinating read. I think that anyone with a pair of eyes who's been watching this, who's in midlife, who's been commenting, posting, thinking about this, can read the subtext of this article. And the subtext really here is menopause isn't that bad. Women, sure, they can take HRT, I guess. And menopause is a siloed event that will pass and it's natural. And that is the subtext of the text. I mean, it's hidden in like a 64-page, 4-part article. But make no mistake, that is the subtext of this article. And therein lies this two sides of the coin or two sides of the spectrum. And when we think about over-medicalization, this is glaringly painful for clinicians and for women who have been talking over the last couple of years about how menopause has been completely it's not silenced or misunderstood. It's just like not even, it just really wasn't even talked about. to this day, you know, I always tell my patients and my students, like, I live in a bubble where I think, doesn't everyone know the safety of hormone therapy? Doesn't everyone know that Prometrium didn't show an increased risk of breast cancer? Doesn't everyone know that vaginal estrogen should be over the counter, not just to ensure that sex isn't painful, but so that you don't get urinary tract infections or urosepsis? Doesn't everyone know that? No, apparently not. My patients tell me all the time, no, they don't. So menopause has just been not even on the radar to be silenced. It is nowhere in medical training, nowhere in residency training. And that's why I am so blessed and, you know, talk a lot about the courses that I teach, the healthcare providers course. You got to join. I'm sure the Facebook group is livid over this. And we teach the safety of FDA-approved hormone replacement therapy, how to counsel patients through it. And you know, more broadly, right, it doesn't have to be just about hormone therapy. I think the huge thing that the Lancet misses by their subtext here is that menopause is just this siloed event. And they completely miss the mark on the fact that being postmenopausal is chronic. And we don't have to say it's a chronic disease. We don't have to say it's a symptom or syndrome, but it's a state of hormone deficiency that has long-lasting impacts, many of which can be negative to our health. And the point here that many people will easily make is that if this was about erectile dysfunction, right, you know, we're just going to replace this with something in men's health, right? Erectile dysfunction is natural and normal. Yeah, you could take a medication, but why don't you just go take a walk in the park? That is the subtext of the Lancet all throughout. That's the problem that people have, is that it is very polarizing to the clinicians and the women who have been advocating and pushing and excited and reading and learning and thinking, wow, not only are there benefits to hormone replacement therapy that can acutely affect my life, improve my symptoms, but they can improve my symptoms long term. So, you know, by taking this siloed view of menopause as this natural process that lasts for X years, they have missed the mark that people, clinicians, have been screaming about for the last couple years. In my case, the last decade. In Louise Newsom's case, also probably the last decade. And so that is what seems to be so painful, so misogynistic, so sexist, so narrow-minded, and so narrowly focused, right? It's not over-medicalized. You could say this, it's painful. It's painful to actually say to the clinicians who see women and hear their stories and talk to them every day and cry with them, right? When you look at also the authorship, I believe there's one doctor, many researchers. I don't know this clinician. I don't know if she sees patients, but if you've been an avid listener to the show, you know that I think there's a huge difference between researchers and scientists and clinicians, and that's also a spectrum. And I don't think one is better or worse, but it's the clinicians mostly who are getting out there, you know, relaying stories and telling stories and encouraging this education. And, you know, that's what's painful, is if you don't see these women every single day, and you're using you're hiding your opinion under some dusty old facts that are some dusty old cherry-picked research, which is what they did. And again, someone else in some other podcast is going to break this down piece by piece. That is something that makes many clinicians unearthed, right? Can't sleep, up on chat messages all day long, you know, doing lives, doing podcasts, talking about this in real time. And again, I don't think that's going to set people back. I don't know. I would be surprised. I think the army is motivated. I think the hormone therapy menopause underground railroad is so above ground now that people are just on the freeway, or they're getting there, or they will. But, you know, this is just, it's really painful. And they argue that this over-medicalization, which I guess is assuming that we're, my gosh, I don't know what it's assuming. I just can't even understand when you're talking about FDA-approved hormone therapy that is the most efficacious and first line for menopausal treatment and been shown to be safe for decreasing the risk of chronic diseases, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, bone loss. I mean, you name it, millions and trillions of dollars in healthcare. That it's disempowering. Now, this, I will tell you, actually, of course, I don't think so. I had a patient yesterday and she said to me, you know, Dr. Hirsch, I just don't know if hormone therapy is going to work for me. And I said, that is okay. I don't think anyone's out here saying that you have to take hormone therapy or that you are doomed without it. Maybe that has been a confusing message, because in efforts to so strongly break down the myths and the misconceptions and all the bad drama, you know, of this old data, there has sort of been this, you know, provoked anxiety of like, well, you have to get on HRT now. But there's a lot of ways we could think about this. First, of course, is to treat women individually and have individual conversations with them. Because just like this patient, as we discussed, it may not be for her, but, you know, also now she's really empowered. She knows about risks and benefits. She's tried it for herself and she's decided the side effects didn't match up to the benefits. And therefore, how else are we going to think about her bones and her sexual health and her vaginal health and her cardiovascular health? Like, she is more empowered. She is totally more empowered. I don't think she would say, gosh, I wish this never happened. I wish I didn't know about any of this. I don't think there's any woman out there who's like, I wish people weren't talking about menopause so much because I'm just learning too much about my body. That is a statement that's right to the gut, right to the heart, which is what makes it feel like these are opinions dressed up as facts, published in a peer-reviewed journal article. And I don't know what the Lancet is mostly equivocal to. People say, oh, isn't it the British version of not the British Medical Journal or the BMJ or like the New England Journal of Medicine, which most people have heard of. And I was like, I don't know. I don't know. But gosh, if it is, that's what makes people so upset. So again, I just kind of want to, you know, look at again where I think all this coming from. I think there is attention being focused on clinicians, especially because they literally will point out in 2022 and 2024 the harms of social media and this pushback, this push and pull of like, well, we don't want you to have too much attention, too much power, too much ego, too much money, the things that keep people waking up, whatever their motives are, right? That's for you guys all to think about, discuss, and decide. And, you know, yeah, they mentioned big business, and I've talked before many, many times about meno profiteering. And I think there is a clear distinction, but it could be hard to tell what's meno profiteering and what's not. But let's even go for that argument. Let's say meno profiteering is happening. How is that actually harming women? Probably, if any way, it's maybe financial. I don't think it's actually medically, and I think there's way, way more harms in under-treating and under-discussing and hiding behind symptoms, both acute and long-term, of menopause. Way more, and probably way more financial issues that you're going to have to pay for without thinking about menopause as a chronic thing, right? Don't want to call it disease, don't want to call it syndrome, don't want to call it a spectrum. So maybe the biggest harms of meno profiteering is financial, but there's another form of hormone therapy that is quite dangerous. It's called pellets. And I tell women this all the time. Of all the thousands of women that I've seen and treated, the only thing that's ever harmed women is the use of pellets, which are freely given. Talk about, like, this has been going on since 2002, after the WHI. Like, this just gets flied under the radar. I don't know why. Maybe because, again, I don't know. I don't always come to these podcasts the most prepared. I just come with my eyes and my brain and what I'm seeing and what I'm feeling and what I'm reporting on. But when we don't treat women with hormone replacement therapy, they do dangerous things. They do pellets. They do compounded on FDA-approved hormone therapy, which is where the danger lies. The article also misses the entire point, and in that subtext of saying, like, well, you know, it's just a natural stage of life, and there's a lot of other lifestyle things women can do to get around it. It doesn't even mention, therefore, how much mistreatment or miseducation there is and undereducation there is. Mistreatment, miseducation, same thing, right? clinicians get, let's just say, no training in menopause. I mean, and when you hear us say that, you're like, oh, I'm sure it's like, you know, just a little bit. Just no, it's really nothing. It's nothing. I mean, again, maybe a few hours, and which is like 0.001% of like medical school residency training probably put together. And this type of negative connotation of like menopause is being over medicalized, it's disempowering women, that is pure garbage. It's actual pure garbage when we know that there is so much work to be done. Over medicalization, I think that like maybe let's just take our most, you know, hopeful, aggressive and say 10 to 12% of women are on hormone therapy. That's what they're calling over medicalization when 80 to 90, if not more, women are good candidates for hormone therapy. How is that over medical? You know what I mean? That's what grinds the gears of so many people. And this article is also really heavy on reassurance and reliance on a lot of cognitive therapy. You know, they talk of course about a lot of other options, lifestyle options. And yes, they do say women should be offered hormone therapy. But again, the subtext here is like, you know, but, and there's no room for buts after a lifetime of decades of not talking about the drastic impacts that menopause has on quality of life and on mental health. And no research is going to ever tell me otherwise, because I see it in my office every single day, woman after woman. I see the impacts of menopause on their mental health, on their weight and their metabolism and their risk for chronic diseases, their bone loss, their sexual health. Three things that land women in a nursing home: Alzheimer's disease, a fracture, and urosepsis from a urinary tract infection. Those are all things that estrogen helps with. So reassurance that it's just a short amount of time, or using cognitive behavioral therapy, sure. Not to say that that's garbage, but it's very paternalistic. It's very pat you on the heady. And we're not about that anymore. We've already done decades of that, and it didn't work. There is proof of this everywhere. The chronic burden that women carry is so high. The risk of Alzheimer's, so much higher. You know, urinary tract infections, broken bones, fractures, osteopenia, osteoporosis. You know, this is so important. And the impact and the weight on, you know, our shoulders is so big that's why I do not actually think that the Lancet is going to, quote, confuse people or maybe confuse doctors. I think wherever you kind of already were on that political spectrum is either going to piss you off and drive you toward that further, or, you know, maybe validate that you don't want to be the one treating menopause. These should not be people treating menopause. They just shouldn't. And, you know, I'm just going to fight opinion with opinion, because truthfully, you know, this is an opinion piece dressed up as research. But the fact that so many women across all these social media platforms are signing petitions, tagging each other, reposting all the reels and shorts about how disempowering this article is, means that we really have gotten somewhere in this movement. And we want to get women off un-FDA-approved, unregulated hormone therapy. You know, you could even argue that getting women on hormone therapy is going to shut down a lot of menoprofiteering, because you won't need a bajillion supplements. You won't need hair masks, lasers, wands, pillows, bed sheets, I don't know, cars that keep you cool. And we also have to look at menopause not as a siloed event, which is, in my opinion, the biggest shtick of them all. And this is not the side that's going to argue for the preventative benefits of hormone therapy, right? You know that now. They're not going to be talking about, oh, hormone therapy decreases XYZ chronic condition. Not that side. And that is an immense disservice when we actually have research to the contrary. So, you know, research was cherry-picked and opinions were posted, and it's almost like that was their form of social media. Now, this again lies why my initial thought was like, let's just let this blow over, because if we don't give it attention, honestly, the general public's probably not leafing through the Lancet on a Saturday morning. But it made it splash, and I absolutely understand the frustration, the anger of both clinicians who are, you know, on the side of this is not over medicalization. This is just the tip of the iceberg, baby. And women who have felt, you know, betrayed and gaslit for years. That is the problem that lies in the subtext of this text. Now, I hope you enjoyed this rant. I, you know, have been thinking about this. I credit so many of my amazing colleagues, my peers, my friends, women that I see, healthcare providers everywhere. And thank you to the authors for this piece of content and to further the movement further. This is actually going to do nothing but positively make the movement further. And actually, gosh, if there's something we can all agree on, like, great, let's gravitate towards it. Drop me a comment over on my Instagram, TikTok, wherever you follow me. I'm at Heather Hirsch, MD. I'd love to hear what your thoughts are. I love seeing all these petitions, all these change.orgs. I just, it's amazing. And thank you for listening to this. I know that hopefully there'll be more shows on the nitty gritty and the details of which, honestly and truthfully, I care less about than I do the fact that women are not slowed down. The movement is not halted or stalled or swayed in any way. And like, I'm pretty confident it's not 24 hours later. And keep being proactive. Your voice is so powerful. Your actions are so powerful. We're going to get through this and probably laugh this off. We can have a collective glass of our favorite beverage together. All right. I'll see you guys next week for a brand new episode. Hang in there. Bye. If I haven't already done so, thank you. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for listening to my show. Consider subscribing so you never miss an episode. Also, if you love the show, your stars or a quick review could really help other women who are searching for information on menopause and midlife around the globe find this show. If you want to work with me, consider the Reclaiming Menopause Masterclass. The link for that is in the description to this show. Thank you again from the bottom of my heart for all your support, and I'll see you next week for a brand new episode.